If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The White House knows it has a problem with rising prices and supply chain bottlenecks, but what tools does President Biden have to address them? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. Let's start with these supply chain issues, which were the subject of President Biden's remarks on Wednesday. Here's part of what he said, quote, "I know you're hearing a lot about something called supply chains and how hard it is to get a range of things from a toaster to sneakers to a bicycle to bedroom furniture." He then went on to say, "With the holidays coming up, you might be wondering if the gifts you plan to buy will arrive on time," unquote. So, Kim, what is going on with this economy?
Yeah, so the description that Joe Biden gave, per usual, was not very accurate. He wanted to make it sound as just a question of the ports not operating 24 hours a day. It's not that simple. It's much more complicated. And some of it, to be fair, is not the result of this administration. There are global supply chain snarl-ups, starting with the fact that you've still got a lot of countries in Asia that are dealing with lockdowns. You know, we have largely opened again, but other places have still got manufacturing facilities shut down. Look at places like Malaysia, which is where we end up with a lot of chips for cars. There are issues there, other raw goods coming from other countries. You meanwhile have a short of barges and cargo ships, which are a result of yet other factors. That's making it harder and higher costs to get goods in and out. You have China that is still quarantining ships that are coming into its port for a week, which takes a really long turnaround before they can then head back out to get to other places. So that's one of the global perspectives. Then here in the United States in particular, we've got a worker shortage, and that is a result of a lot of government policies that are both paying people to stay home, but also discouraging them to come back to work because of vaccine mandates or other complexities that have been imposed because of COVID, or people walking off the job because they don't like vaccine mandates. So a lot of different things are combining. It's taken months to get to this point. It's probably going to take months to unwind. There's no quick fix for the administration.
Yeah, the bottom line, it seems to me, is that demand is back and supply is failing to keep up. And Kim mentioned several issues, and it seems like they sort of cascade through the supply chain. A manufacturer will be short of a part, and so its products don't get out to the next rung. Truck driver shortage means containers are stacking up. And so one thing that Biden announced on Wednesday is that the Port of Los Angeles, he said, after negotiation with the union and the freight movers, the Port of Los Angeles will be operating now 24/7. Bill, do you think that is going to have much practical effect, or is Biden just trying to be seen doing something?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. Look, I'm glad that it's going to operate 24/7. A lot of ports around the world do that. We're not necessarily the most advanced when it comes to some of those practices. Some of those are work rules by the unions and so forth. But it's not a magic fix. I do think Joe Biden is contributing to the problem with the emphasis on the demand side and all the spending he's throwing in, when what we really have is a supply side problem, not enough supply or none, and very difficult to get supply from A, where it's made, to B, where it's sold. So I think there are huge problems. Kim mentioned, I believe, the truckers. You know, I was talking to someone who has a friend in the trucking industry, and he was saying, you know, they have a hard time attracting people because a lot of these young guys who might be truck drivers think, well, in 10 years, they're going to have electric trucks, driverless trucks, and I'm going to be out of a job. You know, whatever the reason, we have fewer people working. We have, as the result of the lockdown, so that makes it harder. And again, 24/7, that's good. It should get those ships unloaded faster. provided they don't fill up the port area and have no place to store the containers after a while. But if you don't have the truck drivers and the trains and so forth to get that cargo out of there and onto its destination, it's not going to do much help. Look, the other real problem with it, I think, is the Joe Biden approach. The idea that if this is a huge problem, Kim outlined the global implications of it, you know, global problems everywhere. And guess what? The answer is for the federal government, not even the federal government, the president of the United States to say, I'm going to make sure it runs 24 hours a day. That's just not the way to look at the economy. We had a story on one aspect of this, the big retailers who are worried about empty shelves, right? The big Christmas season coming up and they're having trouble getting their goods. What are they doing? They're chartering other ships. Home Depot is using planes, a lot more expensive, to fly in tools. That's going to have an effect on the economy because someone's going to have to pay for the higher shipping cost, and it's the consumer. But a lot of these big retailers are saying, well, you know, it's better than having empty shelves. You know, people will pay more if that's the choice they have. I think that the private sector is very innovative, and there's not a single problem that it can't solve in this regard if they had more flexibility. But we're hamstrung by a lot of things, you know, the Jones Act that requires ships going between U.S. ports to be U.S. built, U.S. manned, and U.S. operated. Just all it does is add cost to things and inefficiency. So it didn't get here in a day, and it's not going to be undone in a day, much less by an executive order.
On the point about flexibility, the other thing that stuck out to me from Biden's remarks on this Port of LA business is he says that most of the leading countries in the world are already operating 24/7. He says our ports have traditionally been only open during the week, Monday through Friday, and they're closed down nights and weekends. And why is that? Why are we an outlier among the world's leading trading nations? The only thing, Kim, that I can figure out is it has to do with longshore unions pushing up costs and opposing automation, which is why we didn't get to 24/7 until the president of the United States marched in to have some negotiation. And maybe this is a breakthrough that it is now beginning, but then you've made one small step without really solving the lack of flexibility problem.
Yeah, some of us remember not so long ago the longshoremen going on a big strike along the West Coast. And a big part of it were they were resisting any kind of updates and reforms and changes that would actually make the ports more efficient. Essentially, they wanted to continue. They want to continue with a situation in which, you know, people are still filling out paperwork in triplicate, because the more things you have like that, the more workers it takes, more jobs, you know, the union likes that. And then, of course, there are all kinds of rules and union negotiations over how long you work and how much overtime is going to be and, you know, seniority and who gets the jobs. And it's a real mess out there, considering, as was mentioned here, that rest of the world has kind of moved beyond this. It's understood that in a global community that we're now in, where so many goods travel from country to country all the time, that you have to have a workforce and a situation that is a lot more flexible than that. And unfortunately, when you go back to that strike, I think the most recent one was in 2015, it was basically settled without any real breakthroughs. You know, there has been some things. There has some been, like, I know there's automated cargo handling equipment in some of these places now, but there's still a lot more to be done, and this ought to be putting a spotlight on that.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Similar questions on the energy side. Gasoline prices are up. I think the national average since Joe Biden's election in November is up by more than a dollar a gallon. There's a Journal News story this week saying that nearly half of U.S. households that warm their homes with mainly natural gas can expect to spend an average of 30% more on their bills compared with last year. So higher winter heating costs. Bill, I mean, what's going on this side of the economy?
Well, we have a lot of the problems, and none of the people, the experts in the White House or the Fed, predicted would be where we are now. They're still predicting that inflation's going to be a temporary thing, but they're let's talk about the political problem first. Their political problem is this is very noticeable to people. Again, I have two young daughters who've just been on their own for the last 2 years and so forth. And they're noticing, you know, when they bring home a sack of groceries, that it's a lot more. You know, they don't make that much money and they notice it. They notice it when they go to the gas pump. Everyone notices that stuff. So, you know, you just sort of hear these things. Oh, it's not that big. It's not going to last long. You know, one of the things I think it puts the lie to is the Biden presidency was pitched on the idea that no one making under $400,000 a year would pay more in taxes. Inflation's always been called the cruelest tax because it falls hardest on the people at the bottom of the income scale. And everyone pays this tax. And a lot of these people, you know, he might be promising them free community college. I think he may have just dropped that as part of his $3.5 trillion reconciliation package. You know, they're promising them all sorts of benefits while they're eroding their paychecks. And I think people are starting to see it. And some of the answers would certainly be to dramatically modify the tax and spend and regulatory effort that's the reconciliation bill, because, you know, people are talking about the political defeat Joe Biden will suffer if he doesn't get it. And that's true. But I'm wondering about the bigger defeat if it does go through and what the economy is going to look like next year. I don't think it'd be pretty.
I guess why the energy piece looks a little different from the rest of the economy to me, though, is it seems that there is something in my mind Biden could do here. I mean, demand for energy has rebounded since the economy is coming out of the pandemic, but at least American oil supply has not. You can go look at the Energy Information Administration numbers. Before the pandemic, the U.S. was producing about 12.8 million barrels of oil a day, and that fell sharply when COVID hit, and it's recovered a little bit, but only inching up. It's now at about 11.3 million barrels a day, so there's a million barrels short of what we were doing at the beginning of 2020. And Kim, I mean, what happened there? Why is that number not recovering the way you'd expect it to?
Well, you just put your finger on the big problem. In fact, I think an easy way to describe it, and I liked this, researchers at JP Morgan are calling this the COVID green energy crisis, because on the one hand, as you said, demand is coming back on significantly following the pandemic. People are firing up those factories, driving again, flying again, et cetera. And yet at the same time, we've had this incredible pressure for governments to reduce all manner of production of coal and other fossil fuels because of the so-called climate crisis. And that's the green side of it. So, you know, China and Europe have both pulled back on the production of traditional fossil fuels. The United States, as you just mentioned, you know, Joe Biden took great glee in making, among his first acts, shutting down the Keystone Pipeline and suspending the upcoming drilling leases in Anwar in Alaska and putting a, quote, temporary pause on drilling on federal lands. And, you know, this has been a problem. OPEC has also cut production and it hasn't fully restored it. Meanwhile, you have all these weird supply shifts in that because there's a shortage of liquefied natural gas overseas. It's caused businesses to switch over to oil, which is driving those prices up as well, too. And so there's just the bottom line is there is not enough energy to go around for an economy that really needs it. And the obvious answer for this is for all these countries to rethink this very silly plan that they've been pursuing to just dramatically and quickly shut down fossil fuel production in these kind of pipe dream climate fantasies that they have, and instead go back to what was working. We've had a couple of warnings like this: Texas and their blackouts, California rolling electricity pricing controversies and crises, now a global one. At some point, everyone needs to figure out that we're pursuing the wrong policies, and that's what's behind this.
And for all the growth in renewables, I mean, it's just a fact that fossil fuels are still about 80% of U.S. energy. And the, I mean, Biden's plans, I don't think reflected that. And it's been interesting to watch him react to these price increases now. I mean, Bill, a few months ago, he was asking OPEC Plus to pump more oil. That's a cartel group that includes Russia, not a U.S. friend. And then it was interesting this week, he's reportedly now asking American oil companies for help. Here's the top of a Reuters story. The White House has been speaking with U.S. oil and gas producers in recent days about helping to bring down rising fuel costs. And I have to imagine, Bill, what those conversations would look like, given the previous rhetoric out of the Biden administration.
Yeah, it comes down to supply and demand. And it's finally dawning on the White House that supply matters, especially in an economy, as you say, where 80% of the economy still is dependent on fossil fuels. You just can't decree a green economy as Joe Biden and his economic plan seems to assume. It's going to affect a lot of people. Look, the basic difference between the Biden administration and the Trump administration on energy is that the Trump administration didn't really pick any winner, just said, the more the better, go at it. We're going to make it easier for you to develop your energy. Prices dropped, supply grew, people were in a good place. And Joe Biden is, you know, this is the downside. This is the real downside of the green agenda, that it, like his $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, which he says has no cost, this move that he wants away from fossil fuels has a lot of costs. And again, like a lot of the other costs, it falls very heavily on people at the bottom. I think the estimate from the government is that natural gas this year, it'll cost people roughly $750 to heat their homes for the winter. That's 30% above next year. That's a lot of money for a lot of families. And you have this mirrored, they're paying more for a gallon of gas than they have since Joe Biden was vice president. And everyone sees this and can't hide it. But as you point out on the energy thing, a lot of this is in direct response to the policy and direction Joe Biden has sent, where he's frowning on fossil fuels. You know, I think if you removed this effort to get a green accord with China and so forth, we might have a more sensible policy, but I'm not sure he's going to yield. As you point out, he's made us more dependent on OPEC and other providers. And I think if he had his druthers, he'd rather the supply be created over there so he can claim we're cleaning up here, even as we just import the problem from say, Saudi Arabia. And it's all coming back because you can't just snap your fingers and have supply materialize.
So how do we put this in the context of the broader economy, and particularly these inflation figures? The new figure from the Labor Department this week is that the price level is up 5.4% in the last 12 months. And Kim, the Biden position seems to be that what's going on are these supply chain issues. And once they get ironed out, things will go back to normal, that inflation will go away. Do you buy that story?
Well, I mean, it's slightly related in that what we're seeing is a lot of demand and not enough supply, or rather supply chain issues. But the suggestion is that, as you said, all you need to do is open the ports 24 hours and the whole supply side will sort itself out. What it misses is the key other side of this is demand. One of the reasons we have this massive demand is because of the federal government's massive spending, which is a core reason for this inflation. You've got a Federal Reserve as well that has been bullied and pressured to keep interest rates low, likely too low for too long. because Democrats want to make it easier for them to do their borrowing and do all that government spending. And also there's some politics at play here, like who's going to be the new Federal Reserve chief. You know, some of the people there are still angling to keep their jobs. It's all very complicated. But inflation is not going to just magically get better once some of these supply chain kinks get sorted out, because there are bigger underlying issues at play here.
Yeah, the line that I liked in the Journal's editorial, I think, today on this issue is, it says the breadth of goods and asset price increases also suggests a monetary cause. Pick a financial asset or material commodity and its prices climbed. Real estate is booming, including homes and farmland. And Bill, I think the point being made there is that there's not a supply chain issue that is driving up prices in farmland. Something else is going on here. And so far, I don't think we're seeing the Biden administration really grapple with that.
Yeah, as we as the editorial also said, you know, inflation is always a monetary issue. I think some of these other things contribute to it and have been a problem too, but it's happened, as you point, this is happening in conjunction. Some people have been worried about the Fed you know, the easy money policies and so forth. And I think, again, it's all coming home to roost now, and it's going to be very hard to deny. You know, we suggested, I think rightly, that Jerome Powell's up, you know, his term is coming to an end. Will he be renewed, or will he be the scapegoat for these policies? That will be one of the questions, because it has dawned on the Biden administration that the energy problems and inflation are hitting people. They are seeing it, and they're not buying the administration's explanations for it.
One last thought on this. For all the talk in the Virginia governor's race about schools and so forth, interesting Fox News poll on that. People are asked, what's the most important issue for you in this governor's race? The main answer is the economy and jobs, 32% of voters saying that. And so, Kim, to the point Bill just made, I mean, I agree. I think this is a real problem. The midterms are still far enough away that it's not clear if it's a real problem for the Democratic Party writ large yet. But I do think it's a real problem for Joe Biden and anyone running in races here in the coming months.
Yeah, and I think the real problem they have is that, remember, the argument Democrats have been using continually for why they need to pass their $3.5 trillion social spending bill is that they keep saying it's very popular. And one of the issues for this White House is that when you get inflation like this, it causes people to tune back in. And people do automatically equate government actions, and in this case, a great deal of spending, with higher inflation rates. And you're seeing some polls come out now showing that as Americans are tuning back in, they're rejecting the idea of bigger government and more programs. They're turning against that notion. And this is in addition to the White House having increasingly poor marks on its handling of the economy. You never want to be a White House that presides over inflation, especially of core goods that really, really hit people in the pocketbook, whether it's gas prices, whether it's food prices, you know, they blame you. And you see the White House now, it's interesting to me. Their initial argument was that this will be transitory. Now we had this flap this week with Ron Klain forwarding a tweet by Jason Furman, the former White House economic guy, saying that, well, you know, inflation is just a high class problem. So now you're getting the White House looking disconnected, because that's obviously not true. In fact, inflation always hurts average Joe more than anyone else, who looks disconnected, but also seem to be suggesting that it's really not a problem, or if it is, it's not one that affects you. That makes them look disconnected. And that's not going to help with the polling either.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.